Okay, thank you. Okay, we're on. Yeah.
All right. Good evening and welcome to the Jackson Electrics Commission. We got a few things on our agenda, so let's get started. If you will please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I do.
Would you share it with us, please?
Gosh, we don't have very many microphones.
Right. I had asked to make an administrative announcement at the start of the meeting.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
The administrative announcement.
Yes, here's our administrative announcement. And it's regards to microphones. We do not have many microphones, but it's really important that we all use them during our comments and discussions so that the recording can capture everyone's comments. So we ask you to share and please pass around. So if somebody will kindly pass the microphone to Ms. Miller for her ethics thought, that would be wonderful. Thank you.
We can do this.
And my quote today is from Winston Churchill. Courage is what it takes to stand up and speak. Courage is also what it takes to sit down and listen.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to approval of minutes. And first we'll consider the Ethics Commission meeting minutes for June 20th, 2019. Does anybody have any comments or questions or any discussion related to those minutes? Anybody have any motion related to those minutes?
Motion to approve.
All right, there's a motion to approve the Ethics Commission meeting minutes from June 22nd.
Second.
Take a second from Ms. Boykin. And is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? None. By your action, you approve those minutes. We'll move on to the Legislative Committee meeting minutes for June 20th, 2019. Is there any discussion or motions relevant to those minutes?
I move to accept the Legislative Committee I move to accept the Legislative Committee meeting minutes as written.
Okay.
I'll second that motion.
All right. Motion by Ms. Smith and a second by Ms. Schmidt. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? By your action, you've approved the Legislative Committee meeting minutes. Twister. Is there a staff report from ECHO?
There is. Since we haven't met for a bit, there's been lots of things to make an announcement on, so I'll be brief. First of all, I'd like to introduce everyone to our new staff persons, Sandy Hammerhouse. And Sandy, we interviewed, I don't know, many people. We had about 40 or 50 people apply, and she floated to the very top. And so we were very pleased when she accepted our offer. So welcome to the group. I won't ask you to give a life history or anything, but yeah, we're very pleased to have her. How many weeks have you been with us now?
This is the start of my third.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, good. And her first meeting. So the next thing is...
Okay. So welcome. We're really glad to have you. And I've heard a lot about you from Carl and Kirby, and so really happy to have you here. We should probably introduce ourselves to you so you can put face to a name for minutes and everything else. We'll start over there. If you could just give your name and who appointed you.
George Candler, appointed by the council president.
Imani Boykin on the ethics committee.
Mary Blandwell, I was appointed by the public defender Charlie Coburn.
Hey, I'm Carlton Devoto, I was appointed by the mayor.
I'm Joe Rogan, I was appointed by the chief judge.
Hello, I'm Ellen Schmidt. I'm also an ethics commission appointee.
LaTanya Lipscomb-Smith, appointed by the Ethics Commission. Darcy Gowner, appointed by the state attorney.
And I think you know Cherry Kirby probably, right? So welcome. And sorry to interrupt your report.
No, it's fine. We had several budget meetings in connection with the entire city budget, and our budget was approved. No problems, no questions asked. So that was good. And we'll give some more details on that later. We have had several new city council members starting the 1st of July, and so we've had conflict questions coming up right and left, and Kirby's been doing an excellent job working with General Counsel's office on making sure that any potential conflicts are handled. She's written several opinions, requests for opinions up to the State Ethics Commission, really done excellent work along those lines, and everything is good right now. Everything is moving along, but it's been very, very work intensive July and August when they hit the budget. Like, well, gosh, I work for an agency that's getting money from the city. Can I vote on the budget? No. You know, so their particular bill has to be pulled out, and there's a lot of logistics with that we've been working on. Plus some of the city council committees, like the opioid committee, several people on that committee work in industries that connected to handling the opioid program and potentially could have conflicts if money comes to their organization. So she's been working, really, the opinions on those. I should have sent them to all of you, but it would have been very comprehensive. It was like, how many total people?
Five
people. And a legal analysis of each of their conflict situations under Florida law. They were like 10 pages each. It was like a huge amount of work to get that to the State Ethics Commission. So just to give you a flavor of the kinds of things that we do in the office. The next thing is the Charter Revision Commission, and you got some emails about that. That comes up every 10 years in Jacksonville, and they wanted a presentation from the Ethics Office. So it was a presentation with Ethics, the City Council Auditor's Office, and the Inspector General, the three watchdogs for the city. And I thought it went very well. We got a couple of questions. We thought at one point that they may want to tinker with the charter as it relates to ethics, but they asked us, is there anything that you need? And the way the charter is written, I think, is sufficient. Most of the back and forth and things we develop are in the code itself. So we said, no, we're good. Don't change anything, we're good. So that was successful. We're developing a prototype for training in all of the city departments, and it's starting with Public Works. And so we're really trying to figure out a risk assessment, working with City Council Auditor's Office to see what kind of problems they might have, and develop training specifically for all of their levels of employees. So that's an advancement for training. Global Jax, we did an interesting presentation with mayors from all over Lithuania, which was interesting. All young, frisky mayors, and you know, hopefully we inspired them. And in July, we did a transparency presentation for 24 VIPs from 24 different countries. All varying types of professions, but it's interesting because the State Department is starting to send more of their groups down here for transparency and ethics orientations. So that was quite interesting. And last, about 2 weeks ago, I went to a conference in D.C. for the Society for Corporate Compliance and Ethics, SCCE. It was very interesting, and we had three representatives also from the independent agencies, the Port Authority, JEA, and JTA. So we were able to get together, split up, you know, the different seminars, and we're going to give a presentation this Friday to all of the ethics officers of the city on what we learned from SCCE to kind of spread out the information that we got. So it's been very busy the last few months.
Do we have a report from the Office of General Counsel? Once you get the mic.
I'm a little tight leash here.
I don't think you can.
It's been a quiet summer. I'm just kidding.
I expect so.
And on that note, I have no report.
Do we have a committee report from the Complaints Committee?
Thank you. The Complaints Committee actually had a very robust meeting immediately before this one. We reviewed six pending cases and were able to dismiss all of them. And we addressed three new complaints. We reviewed them and made recommendations.
Okay.
Thank you.
And does the legislative have a...
I don't have much of an update. The legislative committee, last time we met, we were discussing the Amendment 12 That rule has been adopted as of, I think, July 26th, I think, is when the State Ethics Commission decided. I actually spoke with the executive director of the State Ethics Commission today, Chris Anderson, who kind of filled me in on the workings of it. But in his words, he said it took some doing, defining that. And so now I guess the procedure is, and I wasn't entirely familiar with this, but I am now. He said it only the mechanisms involved with a constitutional amendment only happen once every 20 years or so, the way this one is going. So just a little bit of history there for you. So now the legislature will start session in January, and they will work on a statute involving the penalty for breaking the rule, breaking the amendment, the constitutional mm-hmm. amendment. So that's all we have.
Do you know if did it look anything like what it did?
I have copies if anyone would like to see it. There were some modifications and some tweaks. To be honest, I don't know exactly what those were. I didn't compare them to what we were given back then, but I do have copies for everyone if you'd like me to pass them around.
Thanks. Do we have reports from government?
No report.
Thank you. And turn locks. Okay. That brings us to new business. It's been a quiet time for ethics in Jacksonville. So we have very little to discuss today. So perhaps we'll start with post-employment restrictions, independent contractors. These two we can address together. This is an issue that came up last summer, and so July of 18, when a pretty high-ranking member of one of the independent authorities left and immediately became an independent contractor. This raises all kinds of questions about conflicts and you all of a sudden become exempt from a lot of things that controlled you just the day before, right? You can't misuse your position one day, and the next day you can, even though contractually you could have exactly or nearly exactly the same job as you had the day before. So what you have in front of you, so then this came up again recently when the chief administrative officer of the city for a very long time retired, and then shortly after that, became an independent contractor for the city and needed a conflict waiver to do so. And so what you're looking at is that waiver. The waiver is granted under the other paper. You turn to the side that says 602411, the double sided page, hopefully. Although I see that. Oh, there you go. Is yours on the back of the letter? Yeah, it's on the back of one of the pages. You'll see 602411. And where's the exemption process? I'm looking for.
It's C, down fine.
That's right. So you can read C and C. What's going on there? In effect, when you have professional, scientific, or technological employees who lead, the head of the affected government unit can waive this prohibition if that person certifies in writing that the public interest would be served. I've got to confess to you that I didn't imagine that would be used in the context that it was for this waiver. This is the first time, at least mm-hmm. in my knowledge, and Ms. Miller shaking her head as well, that this has ever been used. And this was put in the code
in the 60s, 70s.
Yes, yeah, so this is the first time it's ever been used. And how long after July 11th did you find out about this?
Well, it was actually, the letter was done July 1st. Sam Moussa retired the day before. The letter goes out the next day giving him the exemption. I found out about it when the press called me 3 months afterwards, like, do you know about this exemption from the ethics code? And I said, no. And then I found out more about it and I got this letter. And the interesting thing about the letter that I got, it was addressed to Sam Moussa from Brian Hughes, and exempts him from this provision of the ethics code. I then had discussions with general counsel's office about it, and I said, I don't agree that this is an exemption. This, like, if you take a look at federal law, which is where our this provision comes from, mm-hmm. it's been in federal law a long time. So you have someone in the aerospace industry, and they develop a very unique thing with apples. You don't want them to go out with a company and work on apples, the very thing that they developed. But this was the exception, saying in very narrow circumstances, if we need you back for the public interest to discuss apples with us for some one-shot deal, you know, then we'll have you come back for that narrow purpose. So that was the origin of this law that has never been used. So I thought that the application of this was so broad, you know, go out and work on a whole big project for a couple of years. I don't think it fit the exemption. Of course, my legal opinion on that is not the determinative one. And so I disagreed with the interpretation. In any event, I think we've discussed this. I think ultimately we need to rewrite this whole 411, but until we do, I think Joe and I discussed, along with Kirby, maybe something that would help instead of having someone in the administration give that exemption, to have it go to City Council and have it be more transparent so that if someone wants an exemption like this, then a bill has to be filed and everybody can discuss it and see if the exemption really is in the public interest and let City Council make that determination.
So under state law, and then there are charter, ethics is really a component of the legislature here, the City Council. They've delegated some of that authority to us to be able to do what we do in Ms. Smith's committee, for example. And this provision didn't make a whole lot of sense to me once I finally focused on it, and I have to confess that I didn't spend much time on it before this came up, that you would say that the head of a governmental, of a unit of government, and I don't know what that means, because if you're talking about the executive, then this should have been signed by the mayor. But if you're talking, I don't know what a head of a government, a unit of government actually means. Typically we think of a department, but that would then be a department head that would sign it. And so this is sort of ambiguous to me, and I don't think it's the right place for a waiver like this to be granted. And that just puts aside whether this one should have been granted at all. And so my thought, something I think we could do, is just put that back with council. Of course, council has to approve that, right? They put these through ordinances. And by the way, I see we have Councilmember Derek Dennis here. Thank you, Councilmember, for being here. We appreciate it. And if you want to talk, we'll just get through this topic and then.
Yeah, matter of fact, I just sent my assistant up to, I have some official stuff to, that I want to kind of add to that. So she's up there, so I want to talk about that and then another topic.
Appreciate it, yeah. So that's my thought, and I just wanted to hear all of your thoughts.
One thing I'd like to add on this is that after this got to be an issue, I met with the general counsel, and we talked about actually going through this and redrafting it so that it's not a 40, 50-year-old ordinance that's never been used, that it actually meets what currently is happening and addresses it in a fair way. So that project is ongoing. I mean, we need better guidance than a 40-year-old municipal ordinance that doesn't quite give guidance. There's a lot of situations happening right now, and we don't really have laws to address it. We should have guidance for people. When they go out and they want to be an independent contractor, there should be guidance that's in plain English that they can understand. So we really need to focus on this one, post-employment.
I appreciate the fact that you've addressed this. You know, it looks like the more or less from the loophole. There's a famous saying in ethics that the law is the moral minimum. And, you know, there's an appearance of impropriety involved in all this, and for us remaining silent, who had not paid for it. And so and there's the separate part of it, which is what can we do to fix it so that someone else doesn't creatively use it for purposes it probably wasn't intended for, and that's certainly a good thing to do as well.
And I don't know that putting it to council is a silver bullet, but at least then it's a deliberative process. It has to go to a committee, be thought out, and have a determination sometimes.
So this is love. Not allowed to what was just said. It looks like we are facing a fait accompli as far as the fact that this got done at all. And if there is an opportunity to express publicly the fact that the one I'm not impressed with what just happened, I definitely want to rewrite 411C if this is what it's going to be used for. But I think what's just been done is not in the best interest of the city, just based on this man's qualifications and all of his inside knowledge about how the city is run.
Anybody else?
I would just factually add one other statement, that if you have someone who retires as chief administrative officer, they've retired, and the next day they're out as an independent contractor in an area that they helped develop while they were in the city, you also have a contract that I have a copy of where the same person is now under contract with the city for $10,000 a month to be an independent contractor for the city. You know, so there's like a couple of different things going on here, and we have to have better guidance for people that go out. You know, what can you do, what can you not do? We can't rely upon people just saying, well, you know, the appearance of this isn't good, I think I will not do it. We have to have law that gives them clear lines on how many different ways can you contract with the city. And really, I do believe that Jason Gabriel is he's been diverted on a few things lately, but that he wants to address this too and give clear lines, bright lines for people. But I don't think the bright lines are go out and do as many contracts as you can and also contract with the city. I don't think that's going to be the bright line. I think it needs to be very specific.
Well, speaking of specificity, turning to 401, which is the other provision you have in front of you. We had considered last summer when we began rewriting, we as commission began rewriting this provision, putting independent contractor in here, and we didn't for reasons that aren't clear to me now. But these couple of things that have happened, and this truly is not just the situation with Mr. Moose, I think this has happened, this has come up a couple times in the complaints committee over the past year or year and a half, where we've had these questions about what do you do once you just transition to somebody to being an independent contractor when they're performing the same or nearly identical roles that they did prior? And that gets them out of misusing position, for example. And so my two suggestions for the group's consideration would be to recommend to council that 411C, that's the other one, that if the head of the unit of government concerned with the matter shall certify, would be replaced with if the city council by resolution shall certify. And then for 602.401, I would recommend adding the independent contractor to all four provisions. Well, actually, I guess it's D, 1, 2, and 3 all have officer employees. All of those should say officer employees or independent contractor. There's a broader discussion I think that needs to be had. But that I think is better for the legislative committee going through 602 and seeing where else do we need to consider independent contractors. There probably are other places, but misuse of position is by far what comes before the complaints committee the most. And 411 is the thing where we can affect change or at least recommend change right now. Any other thoughts? Councilor Dennis, are we waiting for her? Are you ready to talk?
Yeah, so I can talk about my second topic within the
other step
topic.
Up. Good work. Thank you for being here. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to speak. Good afternoon, Commission. I'm Garrett Dennis, City Council member representing District 9. And I know there's a lot of stuff that's going on with JEA and heard someone mention the whole cone of silence and prior to becoming a city council member, I'm a general contractor by trade, and I've been on several city projects. And when I was elected, I still had a few city contracts, and I vetted that through the ethics office, and then also to the state ethics commission, and received clearance on that in order to finish those contracts out. And since then, I hadn't bid on any city work. In saying that, I kind of understand what the cone of silence is. And so when we were first faced with the cone of silence, I was one of the first council members to say, wait a minute, I know what a cone of silence is, and not being able to participate in the cone of silence or participate or speak out or have an opinion on the whole process. It doesn't make sense. And so I've been continuing to try to shed light on that process. And so there's a couple things that I posed to the general counsel, counsel's office, and I wanted to kind of share it today and have you all kind of weigh in or even give advice to. And one particular thing is that there's a notice meeting tomorrow where the council is trying to move forward to hire our own legal counsel in this entire process. And prior to that, council members, including myself, was asking questions to the general counsel on how is it that JEA received or was able to get legal counsel, and we're getting pushback. So it's kind of interesting. Here's 2014-664. I only have one copy, but I want to enter that into the record. That's the full copy of a bill back in 2014. Councilman Gulliver, when there was an issue back in 2014, I was on the council, that the council moved to have their own independent legal counsel separate and apart from the general counsel. And it was so amazing because Councilman Gulliver and I, we weren't the best of buds when he was on the council. And I gave him a call, and he answered on the half of a ring, and he said, "Oh, what did I do to deserve this call?" And my response to him that history is very kind to elected officials after they leave office, and his wisdom to get this bill passed is really helping us today. And so that's one of the things that we're leaning on to hire our council. But as I started to do my research on the council getting its own legal counsel, one of the things that I noticed is that in order for general counsel to grant an independent agency their own counsel, there must be a written finding of necessity, right? So the general counsel actually has to do something before they can grant general counsel or outside legal counsel to any independent agency or authority. So today, So the council and myself asked the general counsel for letters of engagement of all the attorneys that JEA is using. So I just went back and listened to a notice meeting of last week, and I asked general counsel Gabriel how many attorneys or how many legal firms does JEA have. He said, "Oh, there's two main firms." I said, "Are there any others?" "Well, I don't know. Are there any others?" So today, we received seven letters of engagements of seven law firms that's working on the JEA recapitalization. And so I want to give this copy to you to put inside of into the record. Also with the ordinance code 701 that says that before a attorney, outside legal counsel is granted any independent agency or authority, there must be a written finding of necessity. And I put that email into the general counsel, and I have yet to receive the written necessity of need prior to engaging these seven outside counsel. So I'm here today just to share that with this body to get guidance, because I think whether you're for the recapitalization or not, we all should be in the light as this process moves forward. So I'm here today to try to get some guidance, to share, again, some guidance on how to move forward and maybe, to see if this body is the right body to look in to make sure that everything is above board and ethical. And so I'm free if you want to ask any questions or get my thoughts, and then I'll share the second part of what you all were talking about.
Anything? Smell? You look like you have something to say.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I always have something to say. No, I think that's interesting. There's a meeting tomorrow about city council getting their own attorney, which they have the right to do. And you know, I think that'll be useful for the council, because they have a lot of questions coming up. Like, just when you ask for advice from this group doesn't, they'll take complaints, you know, and they typically don't say, hey, thanks for, let's give advice on the fly. That would be the type of thing that, you know, Kirby and I can give advice on an ethics question, your counsel with OGC, legislative counsel. You know, so there's a lot of different places, and we can talk about that. But typically this group would address it if it was in the form of a complaint. Am I being accurate on that? But they're interested in...
Yeah. Well, I thought to come because there's been a lot of interest in you know, in the media lately. One particular that really sparked my interest, really piqued my interest, is that one of the law firms is Alan Howard, which is the outgoing chair. And so I don't know if you see that, but there was an editorial in yesterday's paper where he says, you know, the former chair, and he... shared in the op-ed, and I kind of chuckled when I saw it. I said to myself, he should have said, and legal counsel to JEA for the recapitalization. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, complaints start to come in, but, you know, I want to share again in the light on the things that I've uncovered as a council member, because I get a lot of questions out there out in my community. I go to all the community and neighborhood association meetings. So, again, wanted to share, and you know, I don't know if any complaints will come in. I don't know if I'm going to write a complaint, but right now I'm doing fact finding. Fact finding. Fact finding stuff now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, so again, I'm just sharing then. If I can kind of switch a little bit or shift gears a little bit to the first topic about Sam Moussa and his contract. And so I've been very, very interested in that, because I think we all need to be above board, you know, as city employees or former city employees. And so I was very concerned, very bothered that he received a sole source contract right after leaving. And so the whole definition of sole source is that no one else can do it. You know, no one else can do or perform that service, and it's for a specific job. And so my assistant is breaking it down. And so if you look at the state statute and even our ordinance code, it says it has to be for a specific issue. So the word general in how they get the contract actually kicks it out of being specific, and only that person can do it, you know. If you think about it, I'm in construction, so if you think about sole source, if I'm renovating a building and there's a hundred year old elevator, and there's a component that no one else can provide that component, but probably the company that actually manufactures. So if I'm dealing with public money, I can go directly to that source to get it, because no one else provides that. And so there's a monthly contract of $10,000 a month, and I sent an email to the mayor's office, and I copied everybody in the city, because, you know, let's be above board on this. And so I asked for deliverables, and matter of fact, I just received, as I was sitting here, I just received an email from Mr. Hughes. I'm going to read this to you. And she's making copies for everybody, but it says, Councilman Dennis, thank you for inquiring about the deliverables related to the contract P4819. If your ECA had contacted me directly, I would have ensured response the first time she inquired. As you know, the contractor is a licensed professional engineer with decades of public infrastructure experience. This contract takes advantage of his unique experience with city projects related to public works and capital improvement plans. In this role, the contractor is in touch multiple times during the week with myself, our director of public works, and our public works staff. The intent and practice so far is to find ways to expedite taking projects from design to implementation. The deliverables for this project are not less than weekly briefings to the mayor or me. The briefings entail a discussion of project status and processes to streamline completion. since execution of the contract, the contractor has met the deliverables required. Again, a sole source, $10,000 a month, you know, and, you know, we're having meetings, you know, and so, again, I'm in construction, right? There's roads, there's buildings built all day, every day, you know, all over the country, and so there's no one else that can provide that service. So I'll be providing that paperwork for you to go along with what you all are looking at. So again, thank you all for allowing me to take up some of your time, and I hope you all stay dry. And I'm here to answer any questions that you all like. Have the questions, but you know, as a public servant, I am very disturbed about that contract. Not only the contract of $10,000 a month for the next 4 years, the contract is, if you had seen the contract, and then having a contract over with the Jaguars, I think it's wrong. I think there's some ethical issues there.
Thank you.
Thanks for your time. If anybody has any questions, please do ask. I want to emphasize that we're not here in our fact-finding capacity as it relates to this contract. Right? Our fact-finding purposes are done in executive session by the Complaints Committee. But if you have questions related to this more generally, please.
Just a clarification.
Wait.
Since you're going on record, you laid out the fact that Sam Musa got the sole source contract because he had these unique skills, and then you pointed out that there's construction going on all the time, and I think you said, so he's the only person who could do this. You meant to say, so there are many people who could be performing this role.
Thank you for the clarification. Correct. There are many people. You know, I like to say there's a million people in Jacksonville. Are you going to tell me that out of a million people, there's only one person in the city of Jacksonville that can do the job at $10,000 a month, just to, and you heard what his deliverables are, to have meetings, you know, you can call me anytime. Yeah, that's a great gig for $10,000 a month for the next 4 years. Do the math, that's almost $500,000. So, I think it's a great, you know, a great gig. And she has copies if you want to just for the record.
Mr. Chairman, speaking on that last point, yes, I did understand Councilmember Dennis to be making an understatement. The documents that he provided to us with the seven law firms, we're making that a part of a record. Can we actually announce or read who those firms are and what their topics are so that we'll have it for whoever listens to this tape? And I'll be happy to recite that or do it later.
I think we'll keep those in our file, but there were too many firms and too many topics to read, and it's going to take the rest of our meeting time.
Well, that's fine. Let me just point out that seven law firms with seven different topics, none of which has been at least documented to this point as not being within the purview of the General Counsel's office. The whole reason this individual law is in place and the whole reason the charter is in place is because the General Counsel's office is supposed to be the lawyer for this city and all of its components.
Thank you. That's a great observation. Thank you so much. And that goes back to that written need of necessity that says it in the ordinance. And we have, I've requested several times and have yet to receive that from the General Counsel.
Anybody
thank
else?
You all so much.
Thank you,
Councilman.
Thank you
all so much.
Is there anything you want to do about this independent contractor thing, anything in 411 or 401, or is there anything else that we have to discuss?
Mr. Chairman, I'm agreeable to doing what we need to do to try to get legislative correction or amendment, as you pointed out in your comments earlier, and I'll make that a motion if that's the right way to go from here.
Would your motion be that I work with OGC to put together that legislation and then sign a pro forma resolution for it?
Yes, sir. Well, okay.
All right, there is a motion and a second. And just to restate the motion, because there's been some time separation from when I said those, My two suggestions from earlier were that in 411C, the provision says that the head of the unit of government concerned with the matter shall certify, would be replaced with if the city council by resolution shall certify. And then that throughout 602.401, we would add officer or employee would become officer, employee, or independent contractor. Is that how you understand?
Yes, sir. That better states it.
Is that the second?
That is my second.
All right. Is there any discussion? Hearing none. There is no public to offer comment. I had to check on the other side of the lectern over there. Anything else on this? All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? All right, by your action, you have directed me to work with the Office of General Counsel to draft and submit to council legislation that would make those two changes that we just discussed. Potential changes regarding lobbying. This is a more general topic. Do you want to introduce that, Ms. Mealy?
Sure, I'll introduce it. There's many things that we've talked about in the past about tightening up our lobbyist laws. I really think that what we've got is pretty loose. People register their name and their client, not really their issues. That's been the hard thing to enforce. I think we need to revive looking at our lobbyist laws and see if they make sense, see how we benchmark with other cities across the country. But I think that's something really for the legislative committee to take a look at. That's a comprehensive discussion. I can always go into it now if you want to talk about it for about an hour, but I mean, I think it's best to get it to a committee.
Okay. I'll refer that to legislative. That's about another 15 things that I think you have referred right now. Transparency and procurement.
Okay, just as a recap, I've been sending you information on this, so you're pretty much up to speed. But in the charter, specifically, the Ethics Commission has jurisdiction for ethics laws and conflicts, education, and ethics in procurement. And so when I take a look at what does it mean, ethics in procurement, that's that the process that you have for procurement is fair. It's transparent, free from undue influences, and free from conflicts of interest. Clearly, you want clean procurement processes. So I've sent you several articles of things going on recently with the process to perhaps sell JEA. That's probably one of the biggest issues that's happened in consolidated government ever. And it is at least a $7 billion deal. So it's on the radar for everybody in City Hall and certainly all of the citizens. So I have two concerns. The first one is there is a document called the Invitation to Negotiate. This is an exciting document here. And when you read through it, and this is what the press has picked up on. Will the names of the negotiation team be made public? No. Will the evaluation committee members' names be made public? No. Will you know the names of the bidders? No. You know, so that's different than other types of bidding processes we've had in the city. In fact, this is the only one where it's been confidential like this. So my question would be, well, what authorizes that? And there is a law, and I can send it to you, with a Florida Bar article talking about the changes in the law, the procurement law in the state of Florida in 2011. Very interesting. It's 286.0113, exemptions from public meetings in connection with bid processes. And, you know, this makes sense. Like, if we were all bidding on something and we were all wanting to get a contract, and every meeting was open to the public, then I could listen to everything that was going on. You're never going to be able to get anybody to bid in a situation like that. So you have to have rational ways to keep things confidential so that you get the best deal for the public. So that's 286.0113, and the Florida Bar article on it describes that change in the law, which you know, that if you want to delve into that. But what that does is, since it's the first time we've done something like this with the city, everyone's going, oh, it's all confidential. It's, you know, like secretive. You've seen the editorials on the murky process. But, like, if it's based on the law and there's a rational reason for the law, that is of interest. And that's what, you know, we need to kind of pull the string on. So my concern was, you know, with the different conversations I've had with people here in City Hall, I don't think that there's a lot of understanding on this. And so it's like an educational function. It's like, what can we do to clarify, to get rid of confusion? And so one of the things is, you have the letter that the Inspector General sent about the duties of her office, duties of my office, and, you know, hello there, we would like to get involved in this process and attend the meetings, observe, see if the process needs to be explained better, because with people panicking and the headlines that you've all read, does everyone clearly understand the law? Is everything being done according to the procedure, since it's the first time it's really been done this way? And should there be independent watchdogs there taking a look at that process? I think clearly yes. And so today, the Inspector General and I went to the bid opening. And we met with the people in procurement. They went over the procedure for what they were going to do with the bid opening, how they're going to start evaluating it in the next couple of weeks. And I have some suggestions on what they can do to perhaps prevent conflicts of interest and some confusion with it. So, you know, we're right in there in the thick of it, trying to make those recommendations to clarify that process, which I think can only build public trust in what's going on. This is an opinion. This isn't factual. But if I were to guess, like, what is the percent of faith and trust in the process right at this point, I wouldn't say it's like at an all-time high. I think that people are skittish and worried and nervous. Mm-hmm. And all ethics can do is make the process transparent and fair and hold people to accountability on conflicts of interest. We can't determine anything about whether it's a good idea, bad idea. City Council can grapple with that. God bless them, you know, for getting into that. But in the meantime, the process should be looked at. And so that's what I am involved in. And I'm happy to take any suggestions. Anybody wants to call me, you see something in the paper, you have confusion or anything that you don't like the sound of it, that doesn't mean it's really happening. It means that I need to get in there with the Inspector General, figure out what the truth of the matter is, and at least put that on the table. So that's the plan.
If you haven't seen the letter that the Inspector General sent to Mr. Zahn, it's very short. It's worth looking at, and it's really perfect timing. It was a great idea to send. I don't think that was sent to everybody. Was it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And you have copies.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And so that it was a great idea. It's one of those things that I know Carl and I talked about this a while back. And you could just let this go and then spend 3 years investigating it, doing 90 interviews, and then in, you know, 2025 issuing a 300-page report that details what all went wrong. Or you could be there and try to help guide the decision makers right now in real time. And I think that was undeniably the right call by the Inspector General demanding that access, and I'm glad that her and Ms. Miller will be there.
Wish me luck. I will be under a confidentiality agreement on anything I find out, so I won't be able to discuss that.
Oh, this is love. So can we expect periodically that either the Office of the Inspector General or you will be sending letters that will come to the public, giving them guidance on how to keep it as transparent and fair as they can?
No, you won't be getting anything until the end of the process when it's not confidential anymore.
So
I mean, what?
Have they co-opted us?
Hmm?
Have they co-opted us by getting us involved that we can't say anything?
Well, you can say anything as the Ethics Commission. If I'm in there and I know the names of the bidders or I know specific information that's confidential, I can't be speaking about that. But see, the stuff isn't always confidential. It like the evaluation committee, they've got 16 boxes with 16 bids that they opened up today, 16 companies. They now are starting a process of evaluating to see of the 16, who would be the serious ones that meet the criteria. That might only be 5 of the 16. In 2 or 3 weeks, they're going to have an open public meeting, and they're going to say, we picked 5. And you'll know who the people are at that point who were on the evaluation committee. Those people become, they have to let them know at that time. So I'd say the schedule would be confidential right now, and they have an evaluation committee, and they are now going through, they have a criteria to evaluate all the different companies. That's not being done in meetings, but we're going to take a look at that process and see exactly how the people individually are ranking everyone, what their criteria is that they're actually using. And then we're also going to take a look at conflicts of interest connected with that. So all of that will be done, all of that will be done in that process. But at some point it all becomes public and everything is recorded. So the law doesn't allow that to go on indefinitely. And so once the evaluation committee finishes in a couple of weeks, that part will become public. And then it goes on to the negotiating committee. And, you know, we'll just take it a week at a time and see what's going on and see what we can do to make it transparent and to make sure that the process is tight. Since it's the first time, to my knowledge, that the city has ever used this new law, there isn't any precedent for it. So that's why we have to be especially tight on the procedure. And so the Inspector General and the City Council Auditor and now my office will be analyzing every part of it.
And it's in everybody's best interest to get this right. I mean, I don't think this is any part of the city against any other. It's in, it's in JEAs, and if it goes through the process and if somebody buys JEAs, it's in that buyer's best interest that this process be done correctly. Otherwise, you're going to end up in litigation for the next 10 years that Cherry and her office will have to deal with. That may happen anyway. But I think it's in everybody's best interest to make sure that this process is done well, and I feel better knowing that Inspector General and Ms. Miller will be there.
Any questions before I go under a confidentiality agreement on this you want to ask? And you can be assured that we'll go over every aspect of the ITN, which is the invitation to negotiate, and every part of the process will be looked at by the Inspector General and myself. And we've had good cooperation from JEA today. We've had cooperation from the Office of General Counsel that we can attend the confidential meetings.
Anything else?
I do have one separate.
Two.
Yep. Okay, I said I had two concerns with the process. The second one is the cone of silence, which we've talked about a little bit. I've sent you all of the press on the cone of silence. Essentially, I mean, you know, we all know the basic law that if there's a bidding process going on, clearly the city council people can't go up to one of the vendors and say, hey, you know, if you just offer a little bit more money on the contract, I'm sure you'll get it. Giving them clues, trying to swing the bids. I mean, that is typically how a cone of silence is used. Now, this one, I've had a couple of council people call, and they're concerned about being prohibited from discussing the conditions of the JEA sale. So they've asked questions about it. There's been a few meetings. And I sent you the letter from General Counsel's office. And it's all about the cone of silence. So I read it. It's like cone of silence guidelines and different parties and legislation connected to it and associated procurement risks, a flow chart, and then we get to all the laws that you might violate. Okay, so it might be bid rigging, violating procurement codes, bid tampering, which is a crime, misuse of public position, disclosure of confidential information. If you read this, I read it and I thought, okay, if I were a council person and not a lawyer, what would I be able to say or not say? I would not be clear on this. And if I went to a meeting out in the community and a council person was speaking, and the council person, you know, people were raising their hand, they want to ask about JEA, and they said, I'm sorry, I can't discuss this with you. I'm under a cone of silence. And I went, really? You can't discuss this with your constituents? Something about this doesn't sound right. So I met with general counsel, and I said, listen, this is a very scary memo here, you know, bid tampering, crimes, and, like, if I were a council person, what could I say? You know, what could I say? And, you know, lawyers tend to write memos like this, and I think that there needs to be better education on it. So I was thinking of developing something with general counsel. I talked with them about it. And it's like, on one page, here are things that you can say. Flip side, here are things that you cannot say. You know, and give people ideas of because if they read all of this and it says, don't talk about any of the bid requirements on the ITN, the invitation to negotiate. Well, okay, so you can't talk about that. And here it is. You have to go through this whole thing and understand this and figure out, like, what you can and cannot say. And you might commit a crime if you get it wrong. Clearly, people will not say anything. And they should be talking to their constituents. I mean, they should be getting feedback from their constituents. Now, they can't say, listen, I'd like to make a public announcement here that if you add X, Y, and Z to your proposal, I'm going to vote for it. I mean, clearly you can't give clues like that, but we ought to be able to tell them the do's and don'ts in a clearer fashion so that we get them actually communicating with people in the community. So I'm going to work with General Counsel Jason Gabriel about this. He's issuing another clarifying opinion on this, and I mean, that's what Kirby and Andrea and I do all the time. We take a complex ethics ideas and we translate them into pictures and plain English for people, but I don't want people to be so frightened after reading that memo and trying to go through this ITN that they say nothing to their constituents. Clearly, that's not the right direction that we need to go in. So I just wanted to mention those two things to you, that the Inspector General and I are going in and we're taking a look at each part of this process and making sure that it conforms with best practices in the United States. And to that effect, I've reached out to Inspector General's offices across the country. So we will benchmark what's going on to make sure that and I'm sure JEA also wants to benchmark their practices. I'm sure that the several lawyers they have working for them already are working on that. So there's that, and then the cone of silence with the city council people. And, you know, I would like to clarify that from an educational standpoint so they feel free to talk. I just want them to feel free to talk to people. So those are the two things, many layers of this, and I will do everything I can to safeguard the public's interest in this matter.
Any discussion? Okay. All right, the rest of the items on our agenda are pretty mundane. Let's get through. Next is vacancies. Who's taking that?
I'll take that. We have some people that are term limited from the Ethics Commission. We have Joe Rogan, Chief Judge, and that's in the process. Mary Bland Love with the Public Defender. I've already reached out to the Public Defender for a reappointment. And our third is Amani. Amani was given initially a very short term of 1 year because of the vacancies and how it worked out. And so she's eligible for a reappointment. Our rules talk about a broad publication of the vacancy to replace someone on the Ethics Commission, but this is an unusual circumstance since she only had 1 year. And my recommendation would be that you waive the rules that it has to be broadly advertised and let her have like a full full term. And you can do that at this meeting.
Actually, I believe the room might be
No.
Well, are you interested in serving her?
I would serve.
I'd be happy to make that motion.
Let me think about what motion needs to be made there. What is your motion?
It would be a motion to waive the internal operating procedure rule 7 to avoid the widespread publication of this position to allow this board to have a full 2 year term.
As I understand the motion, this is just to waive the internal operating procedure to consider whether to consider reappointment.
Right.
Is there a second to that one?
This is Lowe, I said I'll second it.
Okay. Is there any public comment on that motion? Think not? Do you have something?
I was just going to add a point of clarification.
Sure.
About Rule 7. So Rule 7 also says that a nominating committee will be the one to recommend whether each current commission-appointed member should be reappointed and eligible, or to offer new names at the next regular meeting. So that would be, that's encapsulated in 7,
mm-hmm.
but that's a separate provision than what was discussed.
Okay.
So
that, did you understand we were waiving that whole rule in your motion? You did?
Yeah.
Is that second to you?
Yes.
Okay. Is there any public that now would like to comment? All right. Is there any further discussion among the commission members or our staff?
Mm.
Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
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 Are there any opposed? By your action, you've waived Rule 7, which will allow us to consider reappointment now. So we have... Now for consideration is Ms. Boykin to be reappointed as an Ethics Commission appointee. This would be her first full term. She served a partial term. So this would be whether we are going to appoint Ms. Boykin to a full term beginning January 1st, 2020. Is there any motion in that regard?
I'll so move. This is
Okay. Ms. Love is moved to appoint Ms. Boykin as an Ethics Commission appointee for a full term beginning January 1st, 2020. And there's a second by Ms. Schmidt. Is there any discussion? Is there any public comment? Hearing none. And was there any discussion? I didn't give much time there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? By your action, you have reappointed Ms. Boykin for a full term. And could I bother the General Counsel's office to prepare that legislation?
Absolutely, definitely.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. What's next?
Chair and vice chair.
Okay. Take it away.
We have a chair and vice chair, an excellent chair and vice chair. We do have in our rules that the chair can serve a second term. So you have the option of doing that. And you have the option of going to a nominating committee and having them determine chair and vice chair. I have a preference. You want to know my preference?
I have a question.
Yeah.
So right now, Mr. Rogan is our chair.
Right.
Mr. Schmidt is our vice chair. And
yes.
I apologize for my voice. But Mr. Rogan is rotating off. Not this coming year.
His term as chair is into the end of this year. Our rules say that with a chair, they can serve a second term. So it's an option for the commission to appoint him to be chair for next year, too, because he can serve 2 years in a row.
Okay. Well, I'll make that motion that Mr. Rogan be directed to serve on with everyone's
All right, there's a motion and a second for conscription.
Who
another
long
term
word
is chair?
Draft.
Is there any public comment on that? No. Is there any further discussion?
I just want to say one thing that I want to make sure that Ellen has done an amazing job as vice chair, and I'd like to see her be chair one day too. She has another term coming up, and so there's time to actually extract more work from Ellen. But I you know,
and I would be honored to be considered in the future, but I'm looking forward to another year of watching Joe do his magic and learning from him.
And by my motion, as Ms. Rogan, I certainly don't mean to slight Schmidt yet. We're going to get to that.
All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? All right. By your action, you've conscripted me another year. Did we need to waive something to do that?
No.
No, because you smartly changed your internal operating procedures.
I never did that for a reason. All right. Next, we'll consider vice chair for next year. And is there anybody who would like to serve in that role?
Ellen.
Okay. Ms. Schmidt has volunteered to serve as vice chair for another term. Is there anybody else? Okay. Is there any motion about who we should elect as our vice chair?
Well, since I'm on a roll, Mary Lyons will nominate her, and I will note that she's a volunteer.
I will second that motion.
We have a motion and a second from Ms. Love and Ms. Boykin that we elect Ellen Schmidt as our vice chair for 2020. And is there any public comment? None. Is there any discussion? All in favor say aye. Was there some? That I heard some. All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? By your action, you've elected Ms. Schmidt for a second term as vice chair. Budget update.
Yes. I'll kill two birds with one stone. Do the budget update and the approval of my compensation because they're related. The budget is good news. Our budget was increased by $42,000 from 373 to 415. We had support of the mayor's office on the budget and an increase for our part-time hours compensation. So it went very smoothly. The city council didn't even ask any questions, so that's great. Has not always been that way in the past, so I was pleased. And I sent you the information on my contract, which means every year at this time, after the city council announces the amount of money for our budget, that the ethics commission determines my rate of pay per the attached employment agreement. And my rate of pay last year was $93 an hour, and I'm not asking for any increase, so... The only difference is this year we have a little bit more money in the budget, so I don't work for free at the end of the year because I usually work a couple months for free. So we should have a little bit more compensation to pay that hourly rate. Any questions?
I don't have a question, and I know I do this every time the budget comes up, but I just want to encourage the Echo office to continue to push budget. And it's not, although we're very lucky to have our two ethics officers that we have right now, we need to continue to build the budget of that office. Someday, I hope it's 30 years from now, Ms. Miller is going to decide to leave us.
Could be
and, soon. All right, 25 is minimum. And at that time, we're going to need to make sure that we have in our budget enough money to pay two full-time, high-caliber ethics officers like we have right now. And I don't think we have that. And the only way to get that is to keep pushing. And I know for Ms. Miller, for the ethics office, that can seem self-serving. It can feel weird, but we really need you to continue doing that.
I'll keep nibbling.
Is there any other questions?
Oh, sorry. I'll add, too, that like a lot of us, I'm from away. And unlike most of us, I've read far too much about governance for any individual. And really what the city of Jacksonville has done in creating the budget office and supporting it. When I first met you, I thought, ain't no way that this is going to happen. And every step of the way, there's been support in the city council and in the city to build it up to what it is today. So despite my grumbling about some of the things that's happening now,
There's bad news, but there's good news in terms of ethics in Jacksonville, and certainly what the city has done in supporting this institution and bringing back the IG are two really good pieces of good news, and it should be acknowledged. Mm-hmm. Well, with all the cynicism.
This is Love. This may be a good time to add. I have really appreciated somewhat from a distance because of my circumstances, but I think that your leadership this year, Mr. Rogan, Ms. Schmidt, has really been very proactive, and I'm glad to see that it's been as public as it has. I think it's really served our community well with education and with giving everyone in the city a chance to see that we're live and we're real.
Thanks. Anything else on budget? Some action.
Yeah, you need a motion to approve my rate of pay, otherwise I don't get paid.
Does anybody have a motion to approve Ms. Miller's rate of pay?
I'll move to approve Ms. Miller's rate of pay.
Okay, motion.
Thank you.
I'll second.
Second for Ms. Schmidt to approve the rate of pay for the contract. And is there any discussion?
Something you need to do.
Yes.
Just a point of clarification about restating what that rate of pay is so it's clear.
$93 an hour.
Is that right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. $93 an hour. And Ms. Pollack, is there anything we need to do here? Is this just a pro forma? We're just confirming that we're not going to breach the contract? Is that essentially what we're doing?
Yeah, you just officially voted on the agreement because of the budget that just went through and approved their budget, the office, the ethics office. So,
okay.
So you're pretty much ratifying it.
So this is sufficient the way we're doing it?
Yes.
Okay. And your motion includes that rate of pay?
It does.
Okay. And was that the second you intended?
It was.
All right. Is there any further discussion? Is there any public comment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? By your action, you've approved Ms. Miller's rate of pay at $93 an hour. We're almost done. Good job.
I didn't bring my calendar.
That's okay. Well, let's schedule subject to your calendar.
Okay.
If you're unavailable, we'll figure
it out.
All right. So our last formal meeting in the year, I would like to be in November. What we have done in past years, except for last year, was do an end-of-the-year dinner with the group and significant others, if you would like to bring them. And we did that at Orsay two years before last, and I understand that it's been at River Club some year in the past, and so those are both options if we're interested in doing it. The city has $0 for this, by the way, so it's entirely on you to pay for your way. But I would happily coordinate that if it's something we're interested in doing in lieu of our December meeting. Thoughts?
I would be interested in doing that.
Okay.
I love a good party.
Yes.
All right. I think at least four of us will be there.
I'll be there.
Sounds good.
Oh, the whole group will be there.
The only thing I would suggest is that we find a place that's a little quieter because it was just I just wanted to converse with everyone, and it was just a little loud for that.
That works,
sir? Yes, sir. As much as I love the food, that was my only concern.
Okay.
They have private rooms.
We were in them.
Yeah, we had
that. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah. We thought of that.
What about the River Club for a change?
Yeah, I can do that.
Yeah, we can find a date.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't think that, so Orsay's a little harder. I think the River Club will find us a room on any date we pick. And so why don't we pick something in December if we have our calendars? Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter to me when in December, so does anybody have a preference?
Subject to my calendar.
Of course, subject to your calendar. Is earlier better, the week of the 9th, or even the 2nd?
Not the week of the 2nd.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
What about Friday the 6th?
That's the week of the 2nd.
Yeah.
The week of the 9th, starting then.
And I think Friday's going to be difficult.
Yeah.
Fridays will be difficult.
So what about 9th, 10th?
9th, 10th, 11th are all good for me. The
12th, I'm available.
The 12th is good.
It looks like our commencement is on Thursday, which means I've got a class too.
from Monday, Wednesday are still in.
Is that right?
You're talking 9th and 10th?
9th and 11th.
9th and 11th, sorry.
It's all good.
Okay. Does that not work for anybody?
Is the River Club open on Monday?
I don't know. I'm going to figure that out.
I would prefer not to do it on a Monday. I have a daughter who has a monthly medical procedure, and it usually falls on a Monday, and I don't know when it's going to be for the month of December yet.
No problem.
11th, maybe?
The 11th?
The 11th.
Mm-hmm. What about next week, 17th, 18th?
19th? Oh, my God. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Does that not work for anybody? 17th, 18th, 19th?
I would rather do it. I mean, if we could do it earlier,
I would too.
Some people may be traveling later that
week.
Yeah.
I would too, but just in case they tell me there's nothing.
Sure.
Okay.
That Thursday, I have a conflict. Other than that, every day that week is good. All
right. So I've got 11th, 17th, 18th in that order of preference.
Right.
And then if we can find one, let's find a time to meet in November for our last regular meeting of the year. Mm-hmm. Subject, of course, Ms. Bob County.
Yes.
Let's see, it's the 7th, so that next 12th, 13th. That's right, Tuesday, Thursday.
Tuesday, Thursday, Tuesday.
That whole week is bad for me.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Okay. How about the, I guess we could go to that next week, 18th, 19th, since Thanksgiving is not until the following week.
Okay. Can't do it Thanksgiving week. That's always a failure.
We need public works training week.
Every day that week.
When?
18th and 19th. But Thursday, if we're done by 6:30, I have to do it.
I'm going to be out that Wednesday, Thursday. So, 18th and 19th?
What are our dates?
I can't do the
8th. I can't do the 8th. How about if we have Sandy try to get it organized with an email in the next day or two?
So that never works.
Yeah, it does. We haven't tried Sandy yet.
Yeah, that's right. We've not
had
Sandy.
She's a lucky charm.
Let's spend a little more time on this before we give up. How about the 5th?
Let's see.
Is that a council night?
Tuesday.
It's an election day.
It's a Tuesday.
How about the 4th?
Well, that's Monday, and that might
be. Oh, right. 6th.
Yeah, actually, that's her next procedure.
The 4th?
The 4th, yeah.
The 6th?
The
6th,
so we can all talk about the election.
6 or 7?
I'm available the 6th.
Not officially.
The 6th is good for me, the 7th is bad.
Okay. Anybody not available on the 6th?
Potentially, but I'll talk to them.
That's okay. As long as somebody
can
do
that. Yeah, I have my birthday.
It's your birthday?
My birthday.
My God,
it's
the
7th. All right. Happy birthday in advance. Because we will not see you at that meeting.
We might.
No.
We will not be here. All right, so we have our November meeting tentatively scheduled, and we have a couple 3 dates for the December dinner, and I think that is everything.
Mm-hmm. So the 6th, that 5, November 6th, that 5. Yeah.
Is 5 the best time for everybody?
Yes.
I think so, yeah. All
right. Is there any public comment? No general public comment. It's amazing. Do we have any other announcements? All right, thank you all for sticking with me. I know we went a half hour longer than I would have liked. Thank you for staying here, especially with a full commission that we have today.
Mm-hmm.
So, thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. We are adjourned.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
I don't like this feeling.